The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KLAY or those who advertise their products or services on this station.
Welcome to Know Your Rights, the show dedicated to educating you, the listener, on your legal rights and resources available. This is episode 15. I'm your host, Attorney Noah Davis, broadcasting live from Tacoma, Lakewood, Washington. Be sure to check out our website at www.knowyourrights.com as we post the audio for each show as well as follow-up information on each program. You can also email me at noah@knowyourrights.com. For today's show, we're going to talk employment law. But before we do, with everything that's going on right now in the U.S. and from a legal standpoint and from a political standpoint, I can't help myself but to talk about two really major stories from yesterday and today. Story number one is Mark Zuckerberg testifying in front of two Senate committees. Those committees were combined with some 44 senators. It was a really large committee and extremely unusual to testify in front of almost half of Congress or half of the Senate. So the reason that Zuckerberg was there is to address the massive data leak that we talked about last week, and that's gripping the nation. If you remember our discussion about last week, there's so many unanswered questions about Cambridge Analytica and how the data of so many users, millions and millions of users, was used without their knowledge and in part for the Trump campaign. As I listened to the testimony and questions today, I realized that the Facebook and data release is even greater than I thought, even much worse. You know, when the Cambridge Analytica news story broke, we learned that there were some originally 50 million, the stories broke that 50 million data profiles or profiles of users were leaked or mined and used by this Cambridge Analytica firm. Well, it turns out it's not 50 million, it's 87 million. And we're getting those numbers by Facebook now. They're saying that that's how many users, apparently in the U.S. is what we're looking at, but I don't know if they've just limited it to the U.S., but that was the purpose of the Cambridge Analytica mining effort. It was to get user American U.S. users' details so that they can help in U.S.-based elections. Well, it's grown from 50 million to 87 million. And if you remember, too, from last week, this started with an app that was created by a researcher from Cambridge University in the UK. With the purpose, this research app, people users would download it on Facebook and they'd get paid. I think there was a sum, $1 to $5 that they would receive for filling out this survey. Little did they know that this application was more or less a worm that could help mine not only their data, but all of their network friends' data too. So that's how it apparently grew from 275,000 that downloaded this app through this researcher that Facebook allowed access to Facebook users from or through. So it grows from 275,000 that downloaded the app to 87 million. It's an unbelievable astronomical number, 87 million. If you remember, the number of users in America that have Facebook accounts that are active is roughly two out of every three Americans. So you're talking about 87 million of 200 million active users, almost half of the number of Americans using Facebook accounts were hacked. And now we don't even know who, when, where, or any more of the details of what Cambridge Analytica has, how they use that information, what they know about us, how it's going to be used in the future. Who has it now? Where's that information now? And I'm going to talk about that in a little bit too, because that's a big issue that came up in the hearing. Our own Washington Senator Maria Cantwell, as I listened to the testimony today, she asked Zuckerberg whether Facebook employees assisted Cambridge Analytica while both were engaged in helping the Trump campaign, because they both were. Cambridge Analytica was hired by the Trump campaign to assist in voter profiling and creating ads catered to particular segments of the population to win the Electoral College in particular area, particular states. Facebook was also hired, they're paid money to help with the campaign as the Trump campaign was an advertiser. And so Zuckerberg testified, yes, that Facebook employees were helping the Trump campaign. And when Cantwell asked, well, did they help Cambridge Analytica? Zuckerberg didn't have an answer to that. And that's, you know, one of those unanswered questions we want an answer to. Were Facebook employees helping as they helped the Trump campaign? Were they helping Cambridge Analytica too? Zuckerberg, when asked about the demographics, said that he didn't know what the demographics of the 87 million Facebook users' profiles were. What states were they in? Was in economic classes? Were they across all economic and racial classes and geographic areas? You know, what have they learned about the 87 million profiles? Were they everywhere? Were they just Americans? Were they in Europe? How broad did this breach go? And Zuckerberg just didn't have answers for that. So he's supposed to provide some written information in response to the Senate hearing today. Zuckerberg also didn't know where the information was being stored. And I believe that question came from Senator Klobuchar from, she's a Democrat from Minnesota, when she asked, well, where is this information? There's some reports that it might be in Russia now or stored in some servers in Russia. You know, it's pretty valuable information, 87 million profiles. And there's some really detailed information in some of those profiles, really, really, to the profile users, very sensitive confidential information, maybe messages that they sent to other folks, telephone numbers, certainly their addresses, likes, political interests, religious interests, shopping interests, things that they purchase, but their kids, their family, their names of their family members, you know, all those sorts of things that you wouldn't want to share publicly and with the Russian government particularly, is out there. And so who has this? And Zuckerberg didn't have an answer for that either. So I believe there's going to be a follow-up Senate hearing on Cambridge Analytica, and they'll probably have to subpoena those folks in there to testify under oath about what they know and they didn't know. But back to today's Senate hearing, which I just found, as did the press. I mean, there was 40 or 50 members of the press taking pictures of Zuckerberg. It's like a concert or something. It was amazing to watch, but really important to us. So also Zuckerberg didn't know, when asked, of the 87 million profiles that had been mined or taken by this firm for Trump's campaign, whether or not any of those folks had been contacted or how many had been contacted to let them know that their data had been compromised and what data had been compromised and disclosed. So that's a real question, too. When you end up having like Expedia, which is governed by some credit union or credit agency law, federal law about privacy, when there's a breach there, you have to be notified. Well, when there's a breach on Facebook and all your data is released, you don't have to be notified. There's no federal law. But shouldn't Facebook be reaching out to people to let them know that their information may be compromised? Yeah, it's bad for business, Facebook. Sure. Yeah, you might lose some users over that, but I think you do have a duty. And that was raised in the Senate hearing today, and I like that. Zuckerberg stated that he also didn't know how many fake accounts there's information about how many fake accounts that are out there. And Zuckerberg did testify today. He wasn't under oath, but he testified that Facebook requires that the Facebook profiles that people create be authentic. Well, how do they determine whether or not something is authentic? Do they have to spend, a research team has to go and contact the person, go through their pictures, find out what looks real and not, whether it's just political advertising or it's to cause riots in the U.S. or misinformation? Like, what are they using as a metric to determine whether or not something is fake? Well, when asked, Zuckerberg appeared to answer that there had been only hundreds of these fake profiles removed to date. Only hundreds, but yet there are millions of fake profiles out there. So he didn't seem to have a good answer of how they're going to go about removing all these fake profiles. It's a big, big problem. A big problem. We're going to talk more about Facebook. We're going to talk more also about the Michael Cohen search that occurred at his law office. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Right now, Cholula, one of America's favorite hot sauces, is teaming up with Jack in the Box for the Cholula Buttery Jack. With Cholula hot sauce, crispy jalapenos, and pepper jack cheese on a signature bun. Try it with Cholula fries. Jack!
Can you cool it with the guitar, please?
Sorry, just got a little excited about the burger.
Try the Cholula Buttery Jack from Jack in the Box, part of the Buttery Jack family. Limited time only at participating restaurants. Unbelievable.
I'm done.
Hi, I'm Noah from Noah Your Rights, the show that helps educate you on your legal rights and resources available to you. You know, I want to be your lawyer, but more than that, I want to help empower you. I want to help provide you the tools that you need to be successful in your case, whether you hire me or you hire someone else. I want you to check out our website, www.noahyourrights.com. See what resources are there, see how we can help you, and if there's something that's missing, email me at noah@noahyourrights.com, and we'll see what we can do to add the material that you need to be successful in your case.
I want to thank my mommy for loving me so much, for taking me out to the park, for reading me books, for taking
me to the doctor when I broke my foot in ballet rehearsal,
for leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone. And now,
as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom, for having the chance to take you to the park, for reading you those books we enjoy so much, for being able to take you to your therapies after you twisted your ankle, for understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. And in your new role, we help you help. Visit aarp.org/caregiving to get practical health and wellness tips to provide even better care for your loved one. Remember, visit aarp.org/caregiving. AARP, we help you help. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Noah Your Rights, the show dedicated to helping you, the listener, understand your legal rights and resources available to you. We've got a website, www.noahyourrights.com. You can email me there at noah@noahyourrights.com. I have it queued up right now. If you send me an email, I will certainly have a look during a break and see if I can't repeat your question live on air. You also are welcome to call in 253-581-0324. That's 253-581-0324. Call on in on Noah Your Rights. I will take your question live on air. We're talking about Facebook privacy, which was also the conversation last week, but it's such a big news story and it affects so many of us. You know, I just couldn't leave it alone for this week. In a moment, we're also going to tackle the Michael Cohen, the personal attorney for Donald Trump. We're going to tackle the search warrant that was executed on his law firm, hotel, and his home, in order to get information related to the special counsel Mueller investigation. So if those topics interest you, you want to call in and talk about them, I'd be happy to entertain those calls. And tell me, is this data breach, is it going to affect what you do on Facebook? Are you considering changing what you use in terms of social media apps? Or are you going to keep using Facebook? Did you go on and try to reset your privacy? Because I know I did, and I was surprised to see that all my friends' data was public. I couldn't believe that at least their names or access to my friends' list was public. I never opened that up to the public. My profile was private, but apparently there were some other defaults that were set that I never was told to change or didn't see, or maybe they defaulted some other time. I don't really know, but I went in there and saw that, and I just could not believe that I've like exposed my entire friend list to the public realm. So that was frightening and embarrassing as well. I don't know how much information can be disclosed from that, but have these practices and what you've learned over the past week, is it going to change how you work with Facebook? Is it going to change how you interact with social media? Give us a call, 253-581-0324. Okay, well, let's get back to today's hearing before the Senate, this joint committee. We had Senator Cantwell from Washington. She did a great job. They only had 5 minutes each to ask questions. That's a limited time to ask your question and get a response. Zuckerberg kept it pretty short, unlike a lot of the other folks that testified before Congress, but so that was kudos to him on that, but really kudos to Senator Cantwell for these great questions. She asked if Zuckerberg was going to, and Facebook, was going to adopt Europe's stricter privacy regulations. We talked about what those privacy regulations were and that across Europe, the right to privacy is really deemed a fundamental human right. And Apple says that they believe that to be the case too, that it's a fundamental human right, the right to privacy. Well, has Facebook come out and said that? And if they have to comply with the stricter sort of Bill of Rights to Privacy in Europe, why can't they spread that to the U.S.? Why can't they just make Facebook uniform in terms of adopting the strictest regulatory environment? That's going to help all of us, and it's going to help Facebook comply with their obligations in Europe, because what if someone from Europe ends up logging on here? What if they log on through someone else's account? I mean, there seems to be so many different elements or ramifications. Why not just have the same policy throughout, and let's get the strictest one? So I like Senator Cantwell's question, and Zuckerberg danced around answering it, but ultimately he said there would be some affirmative consent controls. That should mean, I hope it means, that the default's going to no longer be to set to share info with the entire world, because that should not be the default setting. Zuckerberg also said Facebook would implement tighter privacy data sharing control no matter what happened from a regulatory environment. No matter what Congress did in passing privacy laws, Facebook would end up taking the lead on this and go ahead and institute some controls. They also, Zuckerberg said, and in answering some questions from the senators, that he would propose, or their Facebook and their team would propose some laws that Congress could adopt that would apply across social media realms, Twitter and Instagram, which Facebook owns, and a whole bunch of other realms. I believe it was Senator Graham that also asked if Facebook had any competition, and Zuckerberg said, yeah, I think I agree with Graham where he was going, that there's not a lot of competition for Facebook, and it's almost a monopoly out there, and one way to regulate companies is to regulate monopolies. So hopefully Zuckerberg got that message too, that he better be careful and start to take some action fast, because if not, Congress is going to do it. Okay, let's see. Other things from this hearing today. I mean, I, as many people were just gripped by this, and I'm just trying to give you a couple of my takeaways. So Zuckerberg had testified earlier, before Cantwell's questioning, that users had complete control over their data. I went, what? that's not the case. And when questioned more about particular issues, I think that it was revealed that that's not the case. But for example, Facebook on your phone, it allows you to opt in and ask you, would you like to sync your text or sync your contacts? I think that's what it says. Would you like to sync your text messaging contacts? It doesn't disclose that if you say yes, that all your text messages to and from all the folks in your phone are going to be downloaded to Facebook, and that becomes part of your profile, and potentially in the pictures and videos and everything else that you have, everything. You can imagine the stuff that you've shared on your in text messaging, and the things that you've said are all going to be stored on Facebook and then potentially sold to these third parties, and then wind up in the hands of, I don't know, Chinese government officials or agencies, or Russian officials or agencies, and who knows who else is going to get access to this. Maybe your employer start buying this data. I don't really know, but it's just Zuckerberg saying that the user has complete control. It's not true, because the user doesn't understand. They're not giving notice about the type of information. When they consent, do they tick a box or don't consent, or they log on and open up an account? They're not giving proper informed consent. They're not being given the details to make informed choices about what they're going to do with the account and what they're going to say yes to. So, I mean, these are big, big deals. I can't imagine all your text messages being turned over to Facebook. Let's see, what else was problematic? If you download an app through Facebook, you might unknowingly share all your contacts. That's what happened with Cambridge Analytica and the app that folks downloaded. So again, not complete control of your data. I mean, that's obvious, right? 87 million people did not have complete control over their data. They didn't consent to release all their data to Cambridge Analytica. So Zuckerberg saying that was that was the one thing that really stood out. That was a little offensive for me. Also, unknowingly sharing your location while using the app. If other people can see where you're at, if you're on your phone using your app, I mean, that's problematic too. Zuckerberg was asked about whether or not Facebook tracks users after they leave Facebook. So you're on your phone or you're on your desktop, you log into Facebook, and then you're going to close out. Because of the use of cookies and other tracking mechanisms, Facebook can follow where you go to next. And so they were asked, Senator asked, I don't recall which one, but one senator asked Zuckerberg whether or not Facebook does track. And Zuckerberg didn't have an answer for that, but said that That capability obviously is there, and sometimes it's important to know where users go after they leave Facebook. That's pretty scary too, and it's scary when you shop on Amazon and you look for coats, and then the next time you're on Facebook, those coat ads appear on Facebook, and you're thinking, what the? And so that's, you know, it's just there's a lot more questions that are coming out as opposed to getting answers. You know, last week when we talked about Facebook, I thought we had some answers, but now there's just more questions. Zuckerberg also disclosed that Facebook employees have been interviewed by Special Counsel Mueller as part of the Russia collusion investigation against Trump and the campaign team. And Facebook, which, you know, obviously is interesting, and glad that that Mueller and his team is examining Facebook and looking at the Cambridge Analytica. And I believe they've there might be some subpoenas issued out to both parties, Cambridge Analytica and Facebook, about the data that was shared and communications. Facebook says it'll do a better job about confirming the identity of political advertisers, which it had not been doing. For example, the Russian agency that had the $1 million a month budget to place ads. I mean, so they're going to do a better job of finding out who it is that's paying Facebook, because Facebook would just take the money and just turn a blind eye. There was also this massively hundred page it seemed document that Senator Lindsey Graham pulled out. He had printed it out, brought it to the hearing during his questioning, and he said, these are the terms and conditions on Facebook. And so he asked Zuckerberg about that. Are people going to read this? And he read out a paragraph or a sentence or two and said, look, I'm a lawyer. I can't even understand what this says. What does it say? And are people going to read, be able to understand if they do read it? Are they going to understand this? And are people really going to read a 100-page or so document like this? And Zuckerberg said, no, you know, most people are not going to read that. So Graham was saying, we need to do something about this, too. I mean, this is outrageous. Well, one thing, Senator Graham, that should be done, and all you senators out there, is we need to change these arbitration provisions. And, you know, it's come up in the Trump case. It comes up in every aspect of our life where businesses, employers, companies, travel companies, everything we do, try to take things out of court, try to end up undoing the ability of someone to have a class action, trying to keep things private, out of the public's eye, and send it to arbitration over going to court. Facebook, you know, you got to give them props that they did do away. They used to have an arbitration provision that you would have signed when you clicked, yes, I agree to the terms and conditions. So somewhere in that 100-page document was going to be an arbitration provision. Well, they've done away with that. Now you have to litigate in California, which is, you know, obviously problematic if you're in Belgium or Ireland or something like that, or somewhere in Africa or Australia or wherever. But at least it's not arbitration. At least it's going to be out in the public's eye. So that, you know, that's one positive. But we need to change this arbitration law. The Federal Arbitration Act is it's just too much. It's out of control. So, you know, as I'm listening, I'm just going to wrap up this segment. As I'm listening to this questioning about Facebook and Zuckerberg's answers and where all this is going, I realize how valuable Facebook is to not just advertisers, not just commercial enterprises, but to foreign countries. I mean, there's information out on Facebook about our military, about generals, admirals, senators, presidents, their families, their kids, their relations, their friends, the groups, their religious views. There's information about foreign nationals living in the U.S. Or you Americans living overseas. And all this is invaluable information for political reasons and also for national security / espionage ones. If you cannot get, so you're China or you're Russia and you want to find out about family members of maybe Russian nationals in the U.S., or you want to find out about, you know, like how to reach to someone to turn them, or how to compromise someone, or you want to let a military person know that you know where their family is or who they are or what their names are. I mean, this is incredible. It's not just financial information that's out there. It's also security information, safety-related information. When the military, remember the Airbus that was shot down in Iran decades ago, and I think that was a U.S. Vicenis that had shot down the Airbus. If you recall, back in California, the admiral's wife's van, I think she started outside and blew up. And I don't remember if she perished in that or not. But there's a real danger here. And it's not just political advertising. You're listening to Know Your Rights on Clay, 1180 AM. We'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, I'm Jack Box, and for the millions of Americans living with a taco obsession, my new $3 taco deal with three of the tacos you love and a small drink can offer relief. Relief for people like Janet, who changed her name to Mrs. Taco.
Actually, it's Ms. Taco.
Or Dave, who celebrates Taco Tuesday every day.
Taco Tuesday!
No, Dave, it's Sunday, and it's your wife's birthday.
Oh, I should get her some tacos!
So please, try my $3 taco deal today. New at Jack in the Box. Limited time only, price and participation may vary. Small fountain drink.
Hi, I'm Noah from Noah Your Rights, the show that helps educate you on your legal rights and resources available to you. You know, I want to be your lawyer, but more than that, I want to help empower you. I want to help provide you the tools that you need to be successful in your case, whether you hire me or you hire someone else. I want you to check out our website, www.noahyourrights.com. See what resources are there, see how we can help you, and if there's something that's missing, email me at noah@noahyourrights.com, and we'll see what we can do to add the material that you need to be successful in your case.
It is with sound mind and body that I, James Fredericks III, after fighting with all direct family members for decades, leave my entire fortune of $32 million to the one friend I had in the end, the package delivery guy, Matt Songer.
Woohoo! Yeah! I had a feeling about this. I'm rich! Oh, this cannot be happening.
Actually, it's not happening.
What?
And it never will.
I don't get it.
There aren't even people here. That's just one of those murmuring sound effects.
Seriously?
Listen, if you want to have money in your future, don't rely on luck.
Huh.
Put $10 away each month. Cook once in a while instead of eating out.
Okay.
Pay down your high-interest credit cards.
Right.
Small changes today, big bucks tomorrow.
So, no inheritance?
No. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
And just to be clear, no inheritance, right?
You're listening to Know Your Rights on Clay 1180 AM, your conversation station, and the only show that I know of in Washington that's going to be devoted to educating you on your legal rights and resources available to you. I mentioned our website, www.noahyourrights.com. Also emailing me, noah@noahyourrights.com. I welcome those emails. I have done a good job of responding to everyone so far, and I'll continue to do that. If you want to call in, talk about Facebook and how this has affected you, or whether you think it's going to have an impact on you, the data breach, give us a call, 253-581-0324. Last thing about Facebook, I'll still take some calls, and I'm happy to talk to anyone about what this data breach means to them, and whether or not it's going to change their views, and what's important privacy-wise. What information is really private to you? What's confidential? What's sensitive? I'd like to know that from the listeners as well. But before we move off the Facebook issue and we move over to Cohen, I just want to close with a couple things, and that's that Zuckerberg did acknowledge that there are very sophisticated companies out there that are doing just the kind of things that I said before the break that folks, governments, countries, agencies are doing, and that's that they are mining data from Facebook. And when Facebook ends up creating walls to prevent worms and mining of through applications to mine your profile data or to close things off or whatever, those companies are going to continue to be more sophisticated and find ways to try to get that information. So what can we do? Zuckerberg said Facebook's got to rise up to meet the challenge, and they're going to hire some 20,000 new security-related individuals to work on just doing that. Well, in the meantime, your information is at risk of being exposed because there's no fail-proof stopgap program that exists at Facebook right now to keep your information from being shared. I mean, they sell it regularly. That's what Facebook does. It sells ads. Why can't they just sell an ad and post it on your page as opposed to turning over your data, details, confidential information to the advertiser? I don't know. I mean, why not just sell ad space and stop turning over private information? But that's what the advertisers, marketers want, don't they? They want that really deep depth level information that governs the choices that you make about products. Anyway, last week I said at the closing of the show was, I want you to go to settings in Facebook. You can actually go to our website too, under the resources tab, and you can get specific instructions about how to do this. But I want you to download your data. Facebook's making that available. Download it. See what's there. You're going to be really surprised what you read and maybe really shocked. Try and delete past posts. There's an opportunity for you to do that. switch all your settings to private. You know, I mentioned I was horrified to see that some of my settings were open to the public. So make sure that you switch all your settings to private. Go through. It's going to take some time. It's not maybe the easiest thing to use under settings, but it's there. Try to click through everything, including the advertisers that supposedly you've seen. I haven't seen the ones that they say that I've clicked on and used. So I think that's a little bit of a scam by Facebook, but that's another story. And then just be careful what you post. Be really careful what you post, because it's not going to a safe place. It's not being stored without access to anyone else. It's information that potentially can be available to third parties or third-party governments outside the U.S. or the U.S. government or your employer or other people. So just be careful what you post. Okay, our second hot topic, and I know the show's supposed to be dedicated to employment law, and we're going to get to employment law. We certainly are, and it might end up being a two-part show, and we need to bring in some guests on employment law anyway, someone from the EOC and the Washington State Human Rights Commission. But the second hot topic, and I cannot resist the lawyer in me seeing this stuff come up. I want to try to consume as much information as I can, digest that, and then try to rationalize it and then get it back out to you so we can talk about how it affects us. Well, that second hot legal topic is Michael Cohen. And Michael Cohen is Donald Trump's personal lawyer, and he has been for many, many years. Trump confides in Cohen, and Cohen is even deemed this term fixer, where he goes and he does a lot of things for Trump that maybe a lawyer wouldn't do. But maybe it's set up meetings, maybe it's take care of things, maybe it's pay people off, settle cases, gather information, maybe go take pictures, stalk. I don't really know all the things that a fixer, I'm using the quotations, does, but Michael Cohen was a lawyer and was a fixer for Donald Trump for a long time. So Special Counsel Mueller was part of executing a search warrant at Cohen's law firm, the hotel he was staying at, and a home. So it was like this multi-faceted search warrant that simultaneously seized property at three different locations. Pretty crazy stuff. And Trump is livid, as you can imagine, saying that democracy is under attack, that he repeats the same thing, this moniker, there's no collusion with Russia, there's no collusion. And that Trump says everyone's angry on all sides. I heard a commentator say the other day that means like one person told him that they're angry, but Trump says everyone's angry on all sides, and this is politically motivated. Though Republican senators are coming out, like I remember Senator Ernst saying today even, and others have said too, that let Mueller follow the evidence, let's get this investigation over, but let's give the guy a chance, let him follow the evidence. He's already returned guilty pleas, convictions, and incredible evidence about the Russian involvement and these indictments against all these Russian individuals and some of the folks on the Trump team who have lied to FBI investigators and who were involved in some clandestine meetings with Russian officials or representatives. So there's a lot of information that's out there already. It doesn't mean that Trump did something that was unlawful yet. It doesn't mean that he or his team colluded with Russia, but let Mueller investigate. And that's what these senators are coming out. And they're saying that, no, this is not an attack on democracy. This search warrant executed at his personal lawyer's office, hotel, and home. It doesn't go that far. Yeah, it's a pretty major step, but it's not an attack on democracy. You know, I was listening to Tom Hartman today here on 1180, Clay 1180 AM, and Tom was saying that he thinks Trump's so livid because apparently behind closed doors, Trump is just flying off the handle right now. And you can imagine, I mean, if you're a lawyer, if you had confided a lot of information to your lawyer and there were emails and notes and confidential files, that you, if there was some compromising information in there, that you'd be pretty worried about that information getting out and pretty angry that it had been compromised. You'd be angry at your lawyer if he turned it over, and you'd be especially angry if it gets turned over to third parties and used against you. So Trump's livid. Tom Hartman said that he thinks there's information about the prenuptial with Melania, and that if some other information about affairs that he's had and girl and women that he's paid off comes out, that maybe that invalidates the prenuptial and she could get that. So it's all about money. You know, I'm going to disagree with Tom Hartman on that. I mean, maybe there's some of that, but I just don't think that's why Trump's angry about this. I think that there's bigger fish, there's bigger issues. It could be, I'm not accusing Trump of this, but based on a lot of the reports that are out there, I mean, there could be some tax issues. There could be some money laundering type issues. There certainly could be some investments with Russians that weren't disclosed, some investments by Russians or from Trump into Russia, and some other connections that hadn't previously come out that Cohen might be a depository for. He might have been, again, the fixer and the go-between for a lot of those communications. So who knows what's going to come out of this, but I bet you a lot is going to come out of this. And let's do what Senator Ernst said. Let's get to the bottom of this, right? Let's get the bottom of this. Trump tweeted that attorney-client privilege is dead. And, you know, Trump, as I said, is feeling exposed, said, because Cohen knows more about him than anybody else. But as a lawyer guarding the confidences of my client and having the law recognize a privilege between lawyers and clients, meaning that neither the client or the lawyer can be compelled to testify about those communications. When this story first came out, I was really taken aback. I was really shocked. And so news hits the wire, my jaw is, you know, I'm agape. It's dropped out. I just thought, wow, this is a major step. But then when I thought about it, when I sort of stood back for a second, it made sense and it became more acceptable to me. And I definitely can say that attorney-client privilege is not dead. And here's why. First of all, communications with your lawyer are confidential and privileged. No doubt about it. They are. Confidential means that the lawyer can't share them. You govern confidentiality. I have a pledge through the ethics rules that when you retain me or you don't retain me, you end up disclosing something that you intend to be confidential or is meant to be confidential or I could deem to be confidential. I have to keep it so. I'm not able to disclose that without your authorization. Only you can. I cannot. I become a depository for that. Privilege means that court, a judge, or a lawyer in a deposition, or a prosecutor can't compel me to disclose what you've told me. And they can't compel you to disclose what you've told me either or what I've told you. That's all governed by privilege, which is an evidentiary rule and governed federal common law and also federal evidentiary rule and then under state law too. So there's this lawyer privilege, and it's one of the, if not the most powerful of privileges. It is very, very hard to break that privilege, very hard. But there is an exception. There's often an exception to rules. There's an exception to this rule, and that is when your lawyer's communications or the ones to you or the lawyer from the lawyer to you or from the client you to the lawyer, when those are in furtherance of a crime or helping cover up a crime, that's when they're not privileged. You can't use the lawyer as a conduit, and the lawyer can't use that relationship for the purpose of criminal activity. That's where the law stops, because it's no longer in support of a legitimate activity, a legitimate right that you may have. You're breaking the law, and so we're not going to let a privilege hide the effect of breaking that law. So that means that I can't advise you to commit a crime. I can't say, hey, on your taxes, the IRS will never know if you do ABC. I say ABC's wrong, but that's right. They'll never know because they only investigate like 1% of these things. I can't advise you to do that. That overcomes the principle, the privilege. If I tell you that, if you tell me you're about to commit a crime, depending on the type of the crime, whether it's immediate or the danger to others, I may have a duty to warn. I may, in that case, have a duty to breach confidentiality and tell the person who might be the subject of the harm, the potential harm, that a crime may be committed, or tell the police. So those are some instances where the confidentiality and the privilege don't apply. I can't just help you cover up or hide evidence. If you came to me and say, I've got a smoking gun, I'm going to put it in this bookcase here or the shelf, I can't. I'm going to have to withdraw from the case right then. I can't have that information. I'll end up being an accessory to that. I might even have a duty at that point. So, but anyway, there are some very privilege and confidentiality are the hallmarks of the relationship with the attorney-client relationship, but they are not absolute. And committing a crime, being a part of a crime, ends up absolving that privilege or overcoming that privilege. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. We're going to talk employment law too. We're going to have about 15 more minutes to talk Cohen, employment law, and to take any calls you have at 253-581-0324. You're listening to NOAA on NOAA Your Rights.
Right now, Cholula, one of America's favorite hot sauces, is teaming up with Jack in the Box for the Cholula Buttery Jack. With Cholula hot sauce, crispy jalapenos, and pepper jack cheese on a signature bun. Try it with Cholula fries. Jack! Can you cool it with the guitar, please?
Sorry, just got a little excited about the burger.
Try the Cholula Buttery Jack from Jack in the Box, part of the Buttery Jack family. Limited time only at participating restaurants. Unbelievable.
I'm done.
Hi, I'm Noah from NOAA Your Rights, the show that helps educate you on your legal rights and resources available to you. You know, I want to be your lawyer, but more than that, I want to help empower you. I want to help provide you the tools that you need to be successful in your case, whether you hire me or you hire someone else. I want you to check out our website, www.noahyourrights.com. See what resources are there. See how we can help you. And if there's something that's missing, email me at noah@noahyourrights.com, and we'll see what we can do to add the material that you need to be successful in your case.
Rich is just a really, really, really good guy. The term good egg isn't enough to describe him. He's also certified organic and free range. Rich puts the cap back on everything. The toothpaste, the olive oil, the shampoo, everything. He lets his 10-year-old nephew beat him at virtual tennis, even though he can straight up slay his 10-year-old nephew in virtual tennis. When the toilet paper is running low, Rich replaces the roll on the actual holder, not just on the back of the toilet. Rich is texting and driving. Rich? No. What are you doing, Rich? I was just telling everyone how great you are. Texting and driving makes good people look bad. Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to NOAA Your Rights, the show dedicated to informing you of your legal rights and resources available to you. We're talking about Michael Cohen. We're talking about Trump's personal lawyer today. We did just talk about Zuckerberg and the Facebook scandal, and now moved on to the second big storyline, and that's this subpoena served on Trump's personal lawyer, Michael Cohen. Well, I talked a little bit about the privilege and confidentiality and how it could be overcome, and that's in the furtherance of a crime. You just don't have confidentiality or privilege when the relationship between you and your lawyer involves a crime that had been committed, and there's a or the, that's going to be committed, and there's a cover-up. I guess I should back up and say, it's not just that a crime had been committed. That's going to be confidential and privileged. You can tell your lawyer that, and he can't share that. He or she can't share that. But what he can't do is help you further hiding that crime or commit a new crime. That's where you draw the line on the privilege and confidentiality. So if the crime had been committed, that can be a depository for the lawyer and not subject to a breach of confidentiality or privilege. But the lawyer helping you further the crime, or you telling him how you're going to further that crime or cover it up, that itself can undo the privilege. So how does this involve Michael Cohen, right? We're talking about the Russia collusion case and special counsel Robert Mueller. How does that involve Michael Cohen? And why do we need to get the records that he may possess at his law firm, hotel, or his office? Well, if you remember, Cohen came out publicly to state that he signed a non-disclosure agreement with Stormy Daniels. Remember her? We talked about her in the arbitration segment. That he signed it without Trump's consent or knowledge. And then he paid her $130,000 of his own money, again, without Trump's consent or knowledge. Trump then publicly confirmed that he wasn't aware that that this agreement had been signed with Stormy Daniels or that Cohen had paid her money or where he got the money from. This was just before the election, if you remember, in 2016, with the purpose of silencing Stormy Daniels, because she had been drawing interest from a lot of media channels, media outlets, and she was sharing her story. And there was a concern, apparently, from the Trump side of things, whether Trump was aware or not. It's hard to believe that he wasn't intricately involved and definitely aware of this, and I think we're going to get an answer to that soon. But so just before the election, there's this attempt to silence Stormy Daniels by having her sign a non-disclosure agreement and paying her some money. Well, why is that an issue? Why does that bring us to a search warrant being executed on Cohen's law firm and home and hotel room? Well, one major issue is whether or not the payment to Stormy Daniels is going to be deemed a campaign contribution, since it was for candidate Trump for purposes of the presidential election, and people can debate that, but it was. It exceeded campaign limits. No one can argue with that. And it was not disclosed. It wasn't on any campaign finance or disclosure reports. Well, that could be a federal law, a criminal violation. So that's can be if the Mueller team, as they're investigating the Russian collusion, if they come across some federal violations, some federal law violations, they certainly can investigate that and turn that over to a different prosecutorial unit to follow up on. Cohen also says that he borrowed money against his home. Well, what did the loan document say? What was the purpose of the loan? You know, it's a federal crime to lie on a home loan application. I know, again, this is not Russian collusion, but if these things are coming out, if Cohen's saying he borrowed money and he says on the loan application that he's going to do a refinance, or he's refinancing his home so he could build a garage or a mother-in-law unit or something, but instead, the purpose is to pay off Stormy Daniels. Well, he lied on that home application, and that's a federal crime too, so that could be turned over to federal prosecutors. Cohen also has previously said that there's no hush agreement, there was no payment or affair with Stormy Daniels and Trump, and while that's not necessarily, he wasn't under oath, that's not necessarily going to be a part of a criminal investigation, that could be a bar complaint about being dishonest to third parties. But there's also some evidence of a foreign campaign contribution coming from a wealthy Ukrainian, which also could be a violation of criminal law, receiving those monies from a foreign national. And so that could be a reason why Cohen's office, confidential communications at his office were seized, and his home and his hotel, is whether or not the campaign, which he was a part of, he sent emails from the Trump campaign organization. And so he was intricately involved in the campaign for Donald Trump. And some of those emails went to Stormy Daniels. So what was his involvement with this Ukrainian payment? Cohen also knows more about Trump's financial dealings with Russian interests and that dossier that keeps coming up more and better than anyone else. So if you're going to prove collusion, i.e. a criminal violation between the Trump campaign and foreign government, Cohen is going to have that information. So it ends up being sort of a necessary link or corollary between what Mueller is investigating and what his charge was and what we're going to end up learning in the end. Cohen's going to have that missing information. Because he's the depository of information. He has been for a long time. So the U.S. attorney for New York signed off on this search warrant. It wasn't that Mueller executed this on his own. The U.S. attorney that was appointed by Donald Trump, because remember, he fired the former U.S. attorney for the state of New York, replaced it with someone that he felt either had political leanings, Republican leanings, or was going to support him or whatever. But he picked his person, and that U.S. attorney signed off on this, so independent sign-off, not politically motivated. And I believe either Deputy Rothstein, U.S. Attorney Deputy Rothstein, might have signed off on that too. The attorney, so after the search warrant, and then a judge had to sign off on it. A judge had to look at the information, and because this is such an extraordinary step, this is not a search warrant just on someone's office or someone's home. It's an attorney's office, an attorney's home, and there's going to be privileged and confidential information, and there is a heightened scrutiny, that a heightened test that applies because of the privilege rule that excludes this information from being disclosed to anyone in a criminal investigation or civil or whatever, just being disclosed, period. So you have to meet these heightened disclosure rules, and that means you got to have significant evidence. And that would mean the FBI, the Department of Justice, presenting to a judge, an independent judge, information that we don't have yet, that would show a link between the client and the lawyer and a crime being committed or intended to be committed, and that the lawyer was helping further that. That's the link that you'd have to show, and you'd have to have some significant evidence. And we don't have that yet, but eventually that evidence is going to come out. And we might get that evidence when Trump's teams, Trump's lawyers, and Cohen's lawyers end up trying to seal that information, trying to claw it back and get it away from the U.S. Attorney's Office in New York to try to prevent them from combing through it and finding all the links and information that's there. So some of this might come to light. We're going to get a better idea of what the basis of the subpoena or the basis of the probable cause affidavit that was submitted to this judge in New York that signed off on it to allow this extraordinary step, because it is an extraordinary step of seizing a lawyer's records, confidential and privileged communications with their client. I'm betting that besides whatever Cohen has already disclosed that's gotten him in some trouble here, that there's also a whistleblower. There's something else, some inside information that hasn't been publicly disclosed that we're going to find out is pretty significant. I think that's what you're going to see, is that there's some smoking gun and it's going to link the Russian investigation, Cohen and Trump, and it's going to come out soon. So stay tuned. I think we're all going to get that. And it's going to be interesting to see how this unfolds, right? So that's the Cohen investigation. Wow. What this Cohen subpoena is part of the Mueller investigation into Donald Trump and potential Russian collusion. It's really a major step in this investigation and a major development. And I'll be really following this closely, and I'll report back on it next week. Next week, next Tuesday, is tax day. April 17th is our deadline for filing our taxes this year, not April 15th. And you'll want to make sure to comply with that, because you get hit with some pretty steep penalties. I'll see if I can't have a guest on, either an accountant or a tax attorney, that can talk about a couple of tips for us when we file. I know that's the last day to file, and many of you will already have filed, but if you file online, our deadline might be midnight that night, and our show will be on from 4 to 5 Pacific time. So maybe we can provide a couple tips before we get into the main segment of the day, which looks like it's going to be employment law, because I'm only going to really just hit the tip of the iceberg on employment law. I know I started the show off by saying that that's what we should talk about, and now I'm wondering if, I told you that's what we were going to talk about, and then I ended up sidetracking on these developing stories, and I apologize for that. I do want to talk about employment law. I do practice a lot of employment law, and I represent both employers and employees, you know, both sides, not in the same case, obviously, but both sides of the coin, and have a lot of information about employment law and what gets people in trouble or what employees can sue for. So I think it's really relevant to you. I mean, most of us work for someone. Most of us have had jobs or have jobs, and that's a significant part of our life. Very important to our ability to provide for our families, obviously. So you need to know your rights. We need to talk about employment law. We're going to have to devote a whole show to it. Hopefully, I won't get sidetracked again. I will do a better job of not letting these developing stories take us away from some of the information that you really want to listen to. But I hope this was informative. I hope that I shed some light on some questions that you had about both Facebook data sharing, and also the mining of information, the data breach, as well as this Cohen search warrant executed on his law office, Trump's personal attorney, Michael Cohen. You've been listening to Know Your Rights on Clay, 1180 AM. Tune in every week on Tuesdays from 4 to 5 PM as we tackle important issues that really impinge the rights that you need to know about. What are your rights on those issues? How can I help you? Be sure to listen next week. We're going to have employment law or Michael Pellicciotti from the Washington State Legislature on, and we'll have more good information for you on Know Your Rights on Clay 1180 AM.